Good evening, everyone. Can everyone hear? Last week there was an issue. Freddie couldn't hear. You can hear this time, Freddie? Maybe not. Someone want to send Freddie a message and see if he's hearing? I hope that everyone else can hear. I'm happy to be here. I wanted to share, Freddie is gone, so maybe he's having trouble again. I wanted to share with you an experience that I had this morning in a writing workshop that has nothing to do with Zen, the workshop. Or meditation. And I found it fascinating, and I kind of wanted to hear what you, if you would find it fascinating as well, as it relates to our practice. I had the subject of the workshop, it's a series of three workshops, three sessions, which is in French, écrire la poésie du quotidien. So it's writing the poetry of the everyday or something like that. So of course already it's very Zen, but they don't know that. I don't present it like that. So today the, the subject was, we were using a form, which it's called an anaphore, an anaphora, which is a word or a series of words that are repeated at the beginning of a phrase. And it's very common in poetry and in speeches. You know, Martin Luther King, I have a dream. That's a classic example. He repeats that at the beginning of the lines, I have a dream, I have a dream, I have a dream. Or Churchill, when he says, you know, we will fight on the beaches, we will fight in the fields, we will fight in the cities, you know, that. Some other examples. Well, I used an example from Charles Dickens, The Beginning of A Tale of Two Cities, which starts, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. It was, and it goes on like that. It was this, and it was that, and it was this, and that, and whatever. And a poem from, two poems from Guillaume Apollinaire, which some of you who have done my workshops are familiar with. In French, it's Il y a. Every line begins with Il y a, which is, forget in Portuguese, how did we translate it, João?
I think it was a.
Yeah. And in English, it's not very poetic. It's there is, or there are, there is. In any case, but the subject was here and now. So they were, the instruction, the proposition to write was that they were to observe their room in which they were. And this was on Zoom, right? So we're all sitting there together in our different rooms. They were to observe the room and make first some notes. They had 20 minutes and I gave them four different blocks of 5 minutes to note things. First, just all the objects, just the physical things in the room, the colors, the current furniture, the pictures on the wall, whatever is in the room. Next, they had to talk about the, note the smells, the sounds, and the tactile, the feelings, you know, if something was rough or smooth or what it felt like physically. And next was the interior of the interior. So inside themselves, what thoughts came to mind, memories, whatever came to mind about the room, emotions linked with a picture or something. And then the last one was just a list of words, verbs and adjectives that they associated with the room. And then I presented Apollinaire's two poems, which start with il y a, every phrase starts with there is or ha. And they were supposed to just, using the notes that they had made and whatever they were observing, the subject was here in this room. So right here, now in this room. And they did it. And it was really beautiful. You know, there were all kinds of different things and everyone did it. Everyone followed it, but did it differently. And it was as if we really entered into everyone's space in a very intimate way, because we can only see a certain bit, you know, of what is in the room, what's behind them. And one woman, I thought of Anna, because one woman, which we didn't know, she was in her studio. And in her studio was a métier à tisser, you know, a loom for weaving. None of us knew this, that she did weaving. And she was talking about the different fabrics that go in, you know, the different threads. And as she was reading it, it was as if she was, each line that she was doing was weaving the poem, was weaving the tapestry. And it was really beautiful. So we did that, talked about it, exchanged, read their pieces and everything. And then the next one was, they had to do the same thing, except instead of il y a, or there is, using either a phrase, the phrase from Dickens, which it was, or in French it was c'était, or a line from another text I shared with them, I remember, je me souviens, which is from Perec and George Perec and Joe Brainard. And the subject was the same room, the same place, the same day, but looking back on it 5 years from now. So they were being asked to look back on what was currently present, but referring to it in the past tense. And what was fascinating about it was that the first texts were, and this is why I'm interested in terms of our practice, the first texts were very light, very rich in details and in really presence of this moment here and now, luminous, occasional reference to, yes, I have the window open, the window is open, I would prefer to go outside, but I can't. But other than that, you know, it was really very light and gay and colorful. The second text, all of the texts, so there were six people, were very somber, dark, sad, all about heavy, all about the lockdown, the pandemic, the weighty situation with the American elections, the situation in France. It was really stunning. It wasn't just like one person had that. All of the texts were like that. And everyone remarked on it then after, when we talked about it and exchanged. And it was the end of the workshop. We didn't have time to go into why it was like that. And I wasn't going to go into my Zen stuff with them. So we just stayed with that. And I think universally, all of them, when we have at end of the workshop, we do a little evaluation. They all preferred the first exercise. They all preferred writing in the present tense with just what's here now, instead of looking back first I was asking them to project into the future and then look back to the past, which is a tricky operation. But for me, it was very instructive in how we, what we do. You know, I could recognize in that, that when I'm very much just in the present moment, everything's okay. When I'm not projecting into the future, when I'm not looking back to the past, it's okay. And it's usually light. Even if there is sadness, even if there is worry, even if there is sickness, whatever I'm experiencing, but if I'm just totally present with whatever it is, if I give myself to it entirely, it's very different than if I'm clinging to something, you know, if I start clinging to when I was 6, 7 months ago and how terrible it was and what a struggle it was and, you know, all the stuff I can imagine, I can bring up about it. It's much different than when I was really just in the middle of it. Or, you know, any experience we have that is, if we cling to how we were feeling, we're stuck somehow. If we project in how we want to feel, then we're like stirring up all kinds of projections and fears and fantasies. But when we just stay with what's here and now, it's a completely different experience. And that was very concretely evident in this writing exercise, which it was not my intention at all, at least consciously. But I think nothing is really by accident, but that's how it happened. And so I'm curious, you know, can you think of any examples in your own lives where this happens, where you experience something really powerful or something? It can be, you know, we had a really fantastic experience and we hang on to it. I know that myself. You know, I have this great awakening moment, you know, this glimpse of some beautiful thing. And then I carry it around with me. And then it gets stale and old. And it's not at all what it was when I experienced it. Or we can wish that we would have some great experience and project into the future, and we will never have that great experience. It can never be that. But when we just stay with what is, it's fabulous, usually, you know, if we can really be present with it. And our whole practice is about that. Sitting here now with what is. So in effect, I kind of made them do a meditation, a guided meditation in writing, like meditating on their room, the space where they were. So any comments or questions or observations? Lisa? Yeah.
It's funny because the strongest feeling that I experience, I think, or that comes immediately to mind is not one of happiness, it's one of sadness and extreme emotion, which is my father's death. Soon 30 years ago. Very good example, but when I look at it now, it loses its sharpness, it loses its strength, it loses its hurt. And so the emotion then is not the emotion now. And it also works in that, I mean, why not? sort of an opposite example of what you're talking about, because it's not an example in happiness, but one of sadness. But that's also what happens.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily just like when I gave my example of being sick, same thing.
Yeah.
And that speaks to me so much, what you say. My own father's death is soon. The anniversary of his death is soon, because our fathers died like a day apart, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But with 10 years difference. So my father was 20 years. So, and same thing for me. It's not at all what it was then. Joe, yeah?
Yes, what came to mind is a very funny memory of to illustrate the fact that when there's an event in the past and even in the present, I mean, it was very relevant. And it includes someone else that was present at that exact same event. What we do remember from that event may be totally different from what the other is actually remembering also. So that's also what we hold on to might not be the same thing from one another. And I wanted to share that with you, this very pathetic and very funny moment where not too long ago, maybe 2 years ago or something, I got contacted by someone that I was dating when I was in my 20s. And the breakup wasn't really, really nice. But what I do remember from that is that she had sent me a letter saying that I wasn't very nice and I didn't say anything. And I do remember that I went to see her and I had made a song from that breaking up. Or the fact that she was saying that it didn't have any courage or whatever. And so, but then when she contacted me, I couldn't even remember if it was her or not. But I did remember this event. And the more we were actually talking, the more I realized that it can only be this woman to whom I had written a song. And I was very proud of that moment of sincerity. And then I did mention that in the conversation and she's like, "What song?" She didn't even remember that I had written a song, and I was so proud of that moment. It's like it stick like a, but I'm sure it's that woman, but she doesn't even recall that moment that for me was so important. And so it was very, very funny and slightly humiliating for me also.
Nina, yeah.
I definitely relate to what you're saying. I spend a lot of time in my life here thinking about, should I move back to the US? Where is my life heading? I feel kind of like I'm in this permanent, what's the word? Like in between place where I haven't made up my mind about some big things. And it makes me very unhappy and anxious to contemplate those things. And I even kind of feel like, you know, tears starting to come to my eyes. It's always just very full of emotion. But on a day-to-day basis, maybe outside of confinement, let's say, I really enjoy my life. And I don't actually, you know, there are a lot of big questions I ask myself, but when I'm not preoccupied by them, my everyday life is very enjoyable and rich and just kind of unremarkable, but in a nice way, I guess. And so I don't necessarily conclude that I should stop asking myself these questions, or I should stop thinking about, you know, these big things like, okay, my age, therefore, what about this? What about that? My career, therefore, what about this? What about that? My family, you know, I don't think that I can dispense with them altogether, or that they're irrelevant or unproductive things to think about. But I do really notice a huge difference between the times when I'm just living and then the times when I'm kind of like, yeah, but where is this all going? So I think it's exactly what you were talking about. And then I want to share one other funny thing that Joa's story kind of made me think of, which is that oftentimes when I have very difficult conversations, like confrontations or breakups or things like that, I usually only remember what I said. And even though I spent so much time thinking about that conversation, trying to imagine what the person is going to say, how I could respond, okay, if this, then that, it's like I'm so caught up in the emotion of finally saying my piece that I almost don't hear what they say. And afterwards, when I try and relate it to friends or something, they say, so what did they say? I don't really know. And you can't get the script back. You just remember, you just take away the feeling, I guess. And maybe that's the most important thing is, there is no official script, even if you recorded it. You know, someone would go over one line and hear one thing and the other person would hear a different thing. So you never are going to agree on the official version. So it's kind of, at the end of the day, it's what it meant to you. And so I would say that moment of pride, Joa, you know, it's yours. You get to keep it, even if the other person doesn't remember it.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Good examples all. Yeah. Joao.
Good evening. I was listening to you, and what came up was because you were talking about basically feeling happier in the present when we stay with the present. What came up for me was that sometimes it does feel I seem to be with the present, but it doesn't feel all that happy. And actually, I think what happens is if I look deeper, I either realize that I'm not exactly very present with what's with what a certain situation produces in me, either that. Well, it's basically that I seem to be in the present and very aware of what's happening, what's present at that moment, but maybe not that much. And I was wondering if that maybe I can use that as sign to I seem to be with the present, but I'm not all that happy. There's something bothering me, and so maybe I can use that as a sign to look a bit closer and carefully. Am I really? I may be. For instance, when we talked this week. I was a bit far away, or very away, very far away from what my feelings were. Let's say I was not so much with myself. I was projecting or thinking about somebody else, and I was not. So in a way, I was not with the present. So maybe that's why I was uncomfortable. Let's say there was something bothering me. That's what I meant. Because I was thinking about that particular situation, so I seem to be very aware, but I'm not all that happy. So,
I didn't, I'm sorry if I gave the impression that I meant when we're present, we're automatically happy.
Simplified, yes.
It's not what I meant. Because what I did mean, or what my experience is that, and what I experienced in those texts today was there was a lightness to it. That even if it was something not, someone who, one woman, older woman, was talking about all these beautiful objects she had brought back from her trips, masks from Peru and, something from Mali and, all of this stuff. And at one point she said, there are all these things that someday I will not take with me. And that was, it was very poignant, but there was not a heaviness to it. It was just what is. And I guess that's what, maybe that is a good indication for you that when it feels like something is not right, or something, you could look at it and say, well, what is it that I'm hanging on to? Or what is it that I'm not being present with? Or what is it that I'm projecting? Because it's either something you're hanging on to or something you're projecting. Those are the two options. Of course, it's complicated to know what those are, and can be very intricate as well. Lots of things intertwined,
Yeah, I guess lightness describes it better than yeah.
It's a sensation of nothing added, nothing taken away. It's just what it is. And of course it's fleeting, because as soon as we say, oh, that's what it is, then it's not that anymore. But, like you've all told of experiences of either feeling it or not feeling it. And so you do recognize there is something that resonates there, And as I said, I had a very concrete example of it in the workshop this morning. Joa?
Yeah, what Juan is told just makes me think that I want to follow that what he's saying, because there's there is probably a sense that we have through the practice, like the idea at some point that with the practice will come happiness. It's like, okay, because we always hear, suffering comes from craving, and so we need to seize the craving, and if we see the craving, well, therefore we'll seize the suffering. Well, then if I practice, then obviously there should be some kind of letting go should come with the opposite of suffering. But you were saying that, Juan. I was like, yeah, how does that work actually? And it's and I think we might get that wrong idea, actually, that it's that there's something different with the extinction, the nibbana, the letting go, and what comes with this, and and the suffering. It's just not the same. I don't know. How can I say that? I don't know. I don't know for the moment. It's just that it doesn't really end the it doesn't. It doesn't stop whatever happens in life, which is sickness, death, and everything that we go through. But if we go through a certain way, if we really go through, really experience and really let go and really see the arising and the ceasing, we experience that, then something else happens, maybe, but it has a different quality, and I don't know, Roshi, if you want to continue that thread. Maybe I'm not very clear, but
I think we talked about this the other day, Joa and I, something like this, but. I think that it really is this notion of being immersed in, you know, of being, of not looking for the light at the end of the tunnel or something like that. I know myself at one point some years ago, I went into a deep melancholy, you know, a depression kind of thing. I don't know if clinically it would have been depression, but I was really deep into it. And it was so powerful, in part because I was in psychoanalysis at the time, and so I trusted the analyst completely, and so I guess I allowed myself to just really go into it, and I was not looking for the light at the end of the tunnel. It was like Joe was saying, you have to really go through it. I mean, I guess I would say going into it. And not looking for some way out. And that it was such a, you know, this is what it's tricky about it. There was something so powerful about that. I loved it. I wanted to hang on to this deep, deep experience of melancholy. But I had to let go of that too. I had to go through it, you know, I had to go into it fully, and then I had to let go of it, which is what Joe was saying, and emerge. But I couldn't do that if I had been looking for the light at the end of the tunnel. If I hadn't fully gone into it, I would not have been able to let go and emerge. So it's not necessarily has to be a good happy experience, you know, it can be, we become attached to all kinds of things, you know, we get stuck in all kinds of places. And the key is, you know, when Joyce is going through it or going into it, it's no holding back. It's not looking for something else or not hanging on to something you had before. Not looking to go forward to the light at the end of the tunnel, or not looking to get out from where you were before. Because if there's a shred of light, then there's no darkness. Of course, we say within this darkness there is light, but that light is the darkness itself. So you have to, when you're cold, you're just be really cold. When you're hot, just be really hot. When you're hungry, just be hungry. When you're sad, just be sad. That's what this going through and going into is. In the Zen jargon, we would say something more like that. And like, so this morning in this workshop with these people, I put them artificially into that. I was not intending that, I repeat, but that's what happened. I artificially put them into this, just being here with what is right here. Nothing beyond, you know, just whatever's coming into your mind at this moment, whatever you're feeling at this moment, whatever you're seeing at this moment, whatever you're hearing this moment, just that. And then when I ask them to look back, project and then look back, then it was something completely different. In 5 years, they probably won't feel about this day and that place the way they wrote that they will feel. You know, someone joked after and said, oh yeah, in 5 years, we'll look back on the COVID and we'll say, oh, that's nothing. You know, it's much worse now. Or we, COVID, what were we so worried about? There was a vaccination 6 months later and now everything's fine. Or, you know, whatever. Or, oh, Zoom, that's so 2020. You know, there'll be something else in 5 years. Debbie?
I'm having a very interesting experience because most every important word that you said during your talk was mangled by the internet. So I was getting only parts, and thank you all for bringing me up to date. I had a notion what was going on, but it was a little bit strained out by this. But I was just listening to what you all have been saying in the last 2 minutes. I think there's nothing that makes this more obvious than what you and Lise were talking about, the thoughts, the feelings, the notions that we have about our parents from the time we start to grow up until they disappear, or the different moments of our relationships to them are so, they're strong and they can be so different. They can be so contradictory even as things go along. And then once they're not here anymore, to look back, as you were saying, looking back on the virus, but looking back on the relationship that we had with them or on them. In any case, in my life, it has been a major way of seeing how change happens. All those very violent, important emotions that become violent and important in another direction. It's really interesting. To me,
a couple of your words got garbled there at the end, but I think we got the gist of it. And it's true. It's just, it's amazing how things change. And when I say we'll look back on this and we'll think it was not a big deal, I don't think that's true. And everyone in the group this morning agreed too that we would not look back and think, oh, what were we so worried about? But it certainly won't be what we projected this morning. We will look back on it as probably. So yeah, that's very interesting, Debbie. And even having all the words mangled and then having to kind of piece things together and try to figure out what's been said, you know, we then imagine all kinds of stuff. You know, it's kind of like remembering a conversation. Like everyone is agreeing that we don't remember the conversation like everybody else did, like we heard it.
Well, the major factor was not to not get mad, because when I was mad, I couldn't even begin to piece things together. So the strong emotion of anger, in my case, in any case, whenever that sets up, then I know I'm not in the present. I'm arranging my tanks and my weapons.
Yeah, Good point too. Yeah. When we move away from things as they are, then we immediately create separations and differences and focus on the differences and then attack and grasp and cling and everything else. That's true.
Roshi, because of what you just said, I watched this morning, there was a meeting online with Biden and the nurses, and I don't know if you saw that. And what he was able to do, I saw it, the nurse is speaking. She has been in the front lines since February in the hospital. At a certain point, Biden he apparently started crying because you can see him clean his eyes. And then it tells her about his experience of being in intensive care, I assume because of his son, who died when he was vice president, I think. And it's so interesting because that experience of suffering, he was talking about how he would notice the healthcare workers in the hospital, nurses and doctors, and how he was able to see, and he was talking about how he saw in the middle of that suffering, how he actually could see the others, the people who were helping. And like he was saying, you either get, if you make through it, if you survive, if you are sick and you survive, you leave the hospital, and actually you never come back. You never get to see the people who saved you or who helped saving you. That was, I thought that was a very interesting point. The other option is, of course, you leave the hospital and you don't go anywhere. You just died. But I thought it was, I felt it was so interesting because that's what I felt he was saying. His experience is his complete and full experience of suffering and of pain made him absolutely human in the sense that he could actually see the people. And of course he can relate to them in a totally different way. I found that so moving. So this is it. This is what being human is about. Truly. This is it. It's this.
Yeah, it's similar to what we were saying last week. Yeah, and he embodies that. And we can all have those experiences. Yeah, and that's what our practice is about, is being fully present here and now so that we can be a full human being and be and see others as full human beings. Even if we don't like what they're doing or or they leave us, or they, you know, they don't see us. We can see into ourselves, we can be present with ourselves, we can then therefore be present with them, with the others. That's what it is to be in the heart of life. You know, we used to do our heart of life retreats. Well, this is it. This is showtime. This is where it happens. I kind of miss those heart of life retreats, actually, but we're doing other stuff, so. Speaking of which, I don't know if you received the MailChimp, our email today, but if you didn't, look in your spam or junk mail, because we sent an email today about the autumn retreat, and which is not tomorrow, but the following Friday. And you're invited to register and participate when you can, you know, even if you just come on Saturday for the Dharma talk or Monday morning before you go to work, whatever. Please join us. It's a heart of life retreat, even if we don't call it that. Okay. We chant the vows.